All right, so get ready for a deep dive today, folks.
Oh, yeah.
We're going way back to 1910 to explore a Supreme Court case that had a huge impact, Weems v. United States.
All right.
Now, this case is all about how the courts define cruel and unusual punishment.
Right.
And how that definition can actually change over time.
Oh, interesting.
We're talking about a government worker, Paul Weems, in the Philippines.
Okay.
Who got caught falsifying records to, well, skim a little money off the top. Definitely not good.
No.
But the punishment he got, well, that's what makes this case so fascinating.
I see.
So tell us, what happened to Paul Weems?
Well, the interesting thing is, this case wasn't about the type of punishment being, like, super barbaric.
Okay.
You know, like torture or anything.
Right.
Weems was sentenced to 15 years of hard labor.
Okay.
In chains.
Wow.
Which was an actual thing back then called cadena temporal.
Right. Cadena temporal.
Yeah.
Got it.
But it didn't stop there. He also got hit with a huge fine.
Really?
Lost his civil rights.
So,
and then to top it all off.
Yeah.
Lifetime surveillance.
A lifetime of being watched.
Yeah.
15 years in chains for, I mean, essentially a financial crime.
Right.
That seems pretty harsh even for 1910.
And that's exactly what the Supreme Court was wrestling with. You know, they had to decide, does the Eighth Amendment only protect against, like, straight up barbaric punishments? Or does it actually set limits on how severe a sentence can be?
Right.
Even if the method itself isn't, like, you know, inhumane.
I see.
So it was a big question.
So they had to figure out if the punishment actually fit the crime.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, is there a point where a sentence is just too much, even if it's not torture?
Okay.
And that's where this idea of proportionality and sentencing becomes really important in this case.
I see.
So the court had to look at everything Weems did.
Yeah.
And then decide if what he got was really proportionate.
To falsifying records.
Exact.
But it's a tough call, I imagine.
It is.
On one hand, you do want to punish wrongdoing.
Right.
But you don't want to be cruel.
Right.
So what was it specifically about Weems' sentence that the court found so objectionable?
Well, a few things, actually.
Okay.
First of all, cadena temporal itself was pretty harsh, even for that time period.
Right.
Keep in mind, even serious crimes like manslaughter.
Okay.
They often didn't lead to punishments this severe back then.
Wow.
Especially in the U.S.
So even in 1910, people kind of had a sense that this particular punishment.
Yeah.
It was over the top.
Okay, so it was unusual even for the standards of the time.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, the court was really troubled by this combination of things they hit him with.
Right.
Like, they gave him brutal physical punishment.
Mm-hmm.
A really long prison sentence.
Yeah.
And then those permanent civil penalties.
Right.
I mean, that would follow him for the rest of his life.
Wow.
It's like they piled it on. So it was the cumulative effect of all those punishments. Yeah.
Really tipped the scales.
I see. They thought it was all just too much.
Exactly.
So it sounds like the court was trying to make a statement that punishment has to have limits.
Right.
Did they explain how they reached this conclusion?
Well, the majority opinion was written by Justice McKenna.
Okay.
And he relied on a really powerful concept.
Yeah.
Evolving standards of decency.
Evolving standards of decency.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
He argued that the Eighth Amendment, it's not stuck in time.
Right.
It needs to adapt as society's views on what's humane.
Okay.
As those views change, the amendment changes with them.
So they were basically saying what might have been considered acceptable punishment in the past.
Yeah. Could be viewed as cruel and unusual later on.
That's a really interesting point.
It is, right.
So they compared Weems' punishment to what was considered acceptable.
In 1910 America,
yeah.
It was like they were saying,
yeah.
Hey, look in the mirror.
Mm.
Does this really reflect who we are?
Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
So the court was essentially drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah, I think so.
Saying, even though standards might have been different back then.
Right, right.
The Constitution, it has to keep pace with how our sense of justice evolves.
Exactly.
It can't be stuck in the past.
Right.
And that the Eighth Amendment is not just about preventing torture.
Right.
But it's about making sure punishments are fair and fit our values.
Exactly.
And I love this idea, evolving standards of decency.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But how did they actually apply it to the specifics of Weems' case?
Sure.
Like, what did they find to be so disproportionate?
Okay, so the court, they took a close look at what was considered an appropriate punishment
okay.
for similar crimes in the U.S. at that time.
Okay.
And remember, even back in 1910,
yeah.
there were laws against, you know, really serious offenses.
Like manslaughter, we mentioned that.
Yeah, like manslaughter. Mm-hmm. But even those crimes,
yeah.
they typically didn't result in punishments as harsh as what Weems got.
Right, for a nonviolent financial crime.
Right.
So they were basically saying, even though Weems did wrong,
yeah.
the punishment was just way too far.
Yeah, they went overboard.
They went overboard.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it wasn't just the pain of those chains mm-hmm. or even the length of the sentence.
Yeah.
They specifically called out the social stigma
okay.
that would follow Weems around forever.
Even after he served his time.
Exactly.
He would basically be branded as a criminal.
Right.
And that would limit his opportunities in life.
Exactly.
They saw that. Yeah.
As a cruel and unusual addition to an already severe punishment.
Wow.
Like they were saying, come on, enough is enough. You can't just keep piling it on.
So it's not just the physical punishment itself.
Right.
It's the lasting consequences.
Exactly.
That they considered.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
It is, right. It makes you wonder what other factors might be considered cruel and unusual.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question.
In today's world.
Well, absolutely.
Like, where do we draw the line?
Right.
What do you think? So the court was basically saying, even back then, in 1910, there was a limit to how much you could punish someone.
Yeah.
Even for a serious crime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this idea that the Constitution, it, like, needs to keep up with changing social norms.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't sit well with everyone.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, no.
There had to be some pushback, right?
You better believe it.
So what did the dissenting judges have to say about all this?
Well, they were not happy.
I can imagine.
They argued that the court had gone too far.
Okay.
It was the job of the legislature, they said, not the judges,
right.
to decide what punishments were appropriate.
Interesting.
Their concern was this decision could lead to judges, you know,
yeah.
making social policy
okay.
instead of sticking to the law.
So a classic separation of powers debate. One branch saying, hey, you're stepping on my toes.
Right.
It raises some interesting questions about the role of the courts.
Yeah.
And how power is balanced in our government.
It does.
But beyond the legal arguments, did the Weems case actually change anything?
Oh, absolutely.
In the real world?
Yeah.
That's a fascinating legal debate.
Right.
But did it actually have any teeth?
It did, because the Weems case established something
okay.
called the proportionality doctrine.
Proportionality doctrine.
Yeah, and what that meant was
okay.
courts now had the power to scrutinize sentences
uh-huh.
to make sure they weren't crazy harsh.
Compared to the crime.
Exactly.
So this one case about a guy in the 40s
right.
had ripple effects on the whole legal system here in the U.S.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
It really is.
And the impact of Weems, it went even further.
How so?
It didn't just affect how we punish people in 1910.
Okay.
It actually laid the groundwork for a whole bunch of later rulings.
Interesting.
Particularly ones dealing with harsh sentences.
Okay.
For nonviolent crimes.
So things like mandatory minimums.
Yeah, think about that.
Or three strikes laws.
Exactly.
Those debates are all connected back to Weems.
All tied back to those principles.
Wow. I'm starting to see how this one case
yeah.
from over a century ago
mm-hmm.
still matters today.
It really does.
But you mentioned the dissenting justices.
Yes.
And how they were concerned about judicial activism.
Yeah.
I imagine that debate is still going strong.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially when we're talking about something as, well,
yeah.
subjective as evolving standards of decency.
Oh, for sure.
It's such a powerful idea.
It is.
But it can be tough to pin down.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
On the one hand, it allows the Constitution to change with the times.
To stay relevant.
Exactly.
But on the other hand,
yeah.
it gives unelected judges a lot of power.
That's right.
To decide what our values are.
Exactly.
That's a lot of responsibility.
It is.
And it raises the question, who gets to decide what those evolving standards really are?
Right. Who gets to decide?
Is it judges?
Mm-hmm.
Lawmakers?
Yeah.
Or the people?
That's the big question, isn't it?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
It gets to the heart of how we interpret the Constitution.
Right.
How we balance individual rights with the need for order and justice.
It's complicated.
There's no easy answer.
No.
I can see how this whole idea of the Constitution being a looming document
yeah.
could lead to some really intense arguments.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But it's fascinating to see how this one case Weems of the United States,
right,
really started this whole conversation about punishment and fairness and the role of the courts in our society.
Absolutely.
But tell me, how did this evolving standards idea actually play out in later cases?
Well, it's interesting.
Was Weems really a turning point?
I think it was influential,
okay,
but it wasn't always a smooth path.
Yeah.
There was one case in particular, Graham v. Florida.
Graham v. Florida, okay.
In 2010.
2010, okay.
Exactly 100 years after Weems.
Wow.
That really highlights how this concept evolved.
Graham v. Florida.
Yeah.
Now that one rings a bell. Wasn't that about juvenile offenders?
That's the one.
Okay.
It focused on whether it was constitutional.
Okay.
To sentence juveniles to life in prison without parole for crimes other than murder.
Right. So non-homicide offenses.
Exactly.
And the court in Graham cited Weems.
They did.
And this whole idea of evolving standards of decency.
Exactly. They connected those cases.
Wow. So a case from 1910.
Yeah.
About a government worker in the Philippines.
Uh-huh.
Was used to decide a case about juvenile sentencing?
A century later.
A century later.
That's the power of precedent.
That's amazing.
And it shows how these basic legal principles, they can have a huge impact.
Right.
On seemingly unrelated areas of law.
It's all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected.
So in Graham, the court essentially said, what might have been okay in the past,
right,
like giving a kid life without parole,
for something other than murder.
Yeah.
Wasn't okay anymore.
Because our standards had evolved.
Exactly. Society had changed.
Right.
We were more aware of how vulnerable kids are.
Yeah.
And how they can change.
How there's potential for rehabilitation.
Exactly.
Even for serious crimes.
Right.
And they said, sentencing a juvenile to die in prison.
Yeah.
For a non-homicide offense.
Right.
Was now cruel and unusual.
Even if it wasn't seen that way before.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
It is.
This case, Weems, about, you know, bureaucratic corruption in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Helped change how we treat young offenders a century later.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Makes you think, what will future generations say?
Right.
About our evolving standards today?
That's a good question.
But as much as I'm fascinated by how much Weems mattered.
Yeah.
I also have to wonder, did everyone agree with this whole evolving standards idea?
Oh, not at all.
There must have been some serious opposition.
There was.
So what are the main arguments against this approach?
Well, the biggest criticism is that it gives the courts too much power.
Okay.
Critics worry that judges who aren't elected might impose their own personal views or get caught up in trends instead of following the law.
I see. So they're worried about judges making decisions based on personal opinions, not legal principles.
Exactly.
That's a valid concern.
It is.
So it's about finding that balance, right?
It is. It's a balancing act.
We want the Constitution to adapt.
Right.
To be relevant.
To keep up with the times.
But we don't want judges to have too much power.
Right. It's a tricky balance.
To reshape the law.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
Based on their own beliefs.
It's a question we're still grappling with.
That's the tension at the heart of this whole debate.
It is.
And it's bigger than just the Eighth Amendment.
Right.
It's a fundamental question.
Absolutely.
About how we interpret this document. That's centuries old, and how we apply it to the world today.
To the modern world, exactly, with all its complexities.
It's like we're constantly trying to figure out how to stay true to what the Constitution meant, while also acknowledging that times change.
Right, times change and
our understanding of justice evolves.
It does that.
How do we balance tradition with progress?
Right, how do we do that?
Who gets to decide what those evolving standards actually are?
Those are the big questions.
You've hit the nail on the head.
We're still figuring it out.
There are no easy answers.
No.
It's an ongoing conversation.
A constant debate.
A back and forth about how we interpret the Constitution.
Exactly.
And what it means for all of us.
And what it means for society.
But that's exciting, isn't it?
It is. It's exciting.
It means the Constitution isn't just some old relic.
Yeah.
It's alive.
It's a living document.
It's constantly being debated.
Always evolving.
Reinterpreted.
Yes, a process.
And Weems v. United States.
Yeah.
It shows us that.
It really highlights those questions.
It forces us to confront these big questions about what it means to live in a nation where the law can adapt and change with us.
Exactly.
You know, it's pretty amazing to think about it.
Yeah.
This one case, Weems v. United States, really changed things.
It did.
But it's more than just legal precedents, right?
It's bigger than that.
It's a bigger idea here.
Absolutely.
Something about the very nature of law and justice.
Yeah.
in a world that's always changing.
Exactly, a world that's constantly in flux.
What's the main takeaway for you?
Well, what really strikes me about Weems
is
that it shows us the Constitution isn't static. Yeah. It's not just frozen in time.
Yeah.
It's not just telling us what people thought was right or wrong over a century ago.
Right.
It's actually giving us a framework
for
how to think about those concepts today.
So we're not just bound by the words themselves.
Right, not just the literal words.
But by the bigger ideas behind them.
The principles, the values.
That those words embody.
Exactly, the spirit of the law.
Weems showed us that the Constitution can adapt.
It's a living document.
To new realities.
Right, to new social realities.
And it highlights how important the courts are.
Yeah, the courts play a crucial role.
In interpreting those changes.
Absolutely.
And making sure our legal system is fair.
That it's just, that it stays relevant.
But we've talked about this, right?
Yeah.
This whole idea of the Constitution being a living document.
Right, that's a big debate.
It's controversial.
Yeah, there's a lot of back and forth about it.
So where do we draw that line?
That's the question.
Between honoring the original intent.
The original meaning.
And allowing for things to evolve.
Right, how much change is too much change?
It feels like finding that balance is really what it's all about.
It's at the heart of the matter.
It really is.
It's like walking a tightrope, you know?
Yeah, I get that.
Trying to stay true to the original spirit of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But also recognizing that times change.
Times change.
Our understanding of justice evolves. And Weems v. United States is a perfect example of this struggle.
It's back and forth.
It forced the courts and really society as a whole.
To confront a tough question.
To really think about what it means
for
a punishment to be cruel and unusual.
Right. Because that definition.
Yeah.
It can change.
It can.
It's not set in stone.
Exactly. It's fluid.
And that leads to a really important question for everyone listening.
Mm-hmm.
If the Constitution is this living document, always being reinterpreted.
Constantly evolving.
Where does that leave us?
Where does that leave us? Yeah.
Who decides what's just and fair?
Who gets to make that call?
Is it the judges?
Mm-hmm.
Is it lawmakers?
Yeah.
Or is it all of us?
All of us as citizens.
Do we each have a responsibility to figure this out?
That's a great question.
Because it's an ongoing conversation.
It is. It's a dialogue.
We're all part of it.
Absolutely.
And that's the beauty of it.
It is. It's beautiful.
And also the challenge.
Right. There's beauty and challenge.
Living under a constitution.
Yeah.
It's not a rule book.
No. It's not just a set of rules.
It's more like...
It's a framework.
A starting point.
Yeah. A foundation.
For a conversation that never ends.
A conversation that's always evolving.
And Weems reminds us that every generation has to grapple with these questions.
You all have a responsibility.
To keep the conversation going.
To keep thinking about justice.
To keep redefining what it means.
Absolutely.
To live in a fair and just society.
That's what it's all about.
You know, I think that's what makes this so fascinating.
Yeah.
It's not about getting all the answers.
Right. It's not about finding all the solutions.
It's about asking the right questions.
Asking the right questions, yeah.
Wrestling with different perspectives.
Considering all sides.
And realizing that the law, like society.
Like life itself.
It's constantly changing.
It's dynamic. It's evolving.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Weems v. United States.
Yeah.
I hope you've come away with a new perspective.
A deeper understanding.
Not just on this case.
But on the legal system as a whole.
It's complex.
It is.
It's nuanced.
It's full of surprises.
And maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
This
deep dive
has sparked some new questions for you.
Some new curiosities.
About how the law affects your life.
How it shapes our world.
And how you.
And all this.
Can shape the law.
That's what we hope for.
That's what it's all about.
That's the goal.
So until next time.
Yeah.
Keep exploring.
Keep those questions coming.
Keep questioning.
Keep digging.
And keep diving deep into this amazing world.
This fascinating world.
Of law and justice.
We'll see you next time.